Next morning when I awakened, I found Jim and Dill in the backyard deep in conversation. When I joined them, as usual, they said, "Go away." "Will not. This yard's as much mine as it is yours, Jim Finch. I got just as much right to play in it as you have." Dill and Jim emerged from a brief huddle. "If you stay, you've got to do what we tell you," Dill warned. "Well," I said, "who's so high and mighty all of a sudden? If you don't say you'll do what we tell you, we ain't going to tell you anything," Dill continued. "You act like you grew 10 inches in the night." "All right, what is it?" Jim said placidly, "We are going to give a note to Boo Radley." "Just how?" I was trying to fight down the automatic terror rising in me. It was all right for Miss Maudie to talk. She was old and snug on her porch. It was different for us. Jim was merely going to put the note on the end of a fishing pole and stick it through the shutters. If anyone came along, Dill would ring the bell. Dill raised his right hand. In it was my mother's silver dinner bell. "I'm going around to the side of the house," said Jim. "We looked yesterday from across the street, and there's a shutter loose. Think maybe I can make it stick on the windowsill at least." "Jim, now you're in it, and you can't get out of it. You'll just stay in it, Miss Pris." "Okay, okay, but I don't want to watch." "Jim, somebody was..." "Yes, you will. You'll watch the back end of the lot, and Dill's going to watch the front of the house and up the street, and if anybody comes, he'll ring the bell. That clear?" "All right, then. What'd you write him?" Dill said, "We're asking him real politely to come out sometimes and tell us what he does in there." We said we wouldn't hurt him, and we'd buy him an ice cream. "You all have gone crazy. He'll kill us." Dill said, "It's my idea. I figure if he'd come out and sit a spell with us, he might feel better." "How do you know he don't feel good?" "Well, how'd you feel if you'd been shut up for 100 years with nothing but cats to eat? I bet he's got a beard down to here. Like your daddy's? He ain't got a beard, he..." Dill stopped as if trying to remember. "Uh-huh, gotcha," I said. "You said before you were off the train good your daddy had a black beard. If it's all the same to you, he shaved it off last summer." "Yeah, and I've got the letter to prove it. He sent me $2, too." "Keep on. I reckon he even sent you a mounted police uniform. That never showed up, did it? You just keep on telling him, son." Dill Harris could tell the biggest ones I ever heard. Among other things, he had been up in a mail plane 17 times. He had been to Nova Scotia, he had seen an elephant, and his granddaddy was Brigadier General Joe Wheeler and left him his sword. "You all hush," said Jim. He scuttled beneath the house and came out with a yellow bamboo pole. "Reckon this is long enough to reach from the sidewalk? Anybody who's brave enough to go up and touch the house hadn't ought to use a fishing pole," I said. "Why don't you just knock the front door down?" "This is different," said Jim. "How many times do I have to tell you that?" Dill took a piece of paper from his pocket and gave it to Jim. The three of us walked cautiously toward the old house. Dill remained at the light pole on the front center of the lot, and Jim and I edged down the sidewalk parallel to the side of the house. I walked beyond Jim and stood where I could see around the curve. "All clear," I said. "Not a soul in sight." Jim looked up the sidewalk to Dill, who nodded. Jim attached the note to the end of the fishing pole, let the pole out across the yard, and pushed it toward the window he had selected. The pole lacked several inches of being long enough, and Jim leaned over as far as he could. I watched him making jabbing motions for so long, I abandoned my post and went to him. "Can't get it off the pole," he muttered. "Or if I get it off, I can't make it stay. Go on back down the street, Scout." I returned and gazed around the curve at the empty road. Occasionally, I looked back at Jim, who was patiently trying to place the note on the windowsill. It would flutter to the ground, and Jim would jab it up, until I thought if Boo Radley ever received it, he wouldn't be able to read it. I was looking down the street when the dinner bell rang. Shoulder up, I reeled around to face Boo Radley and his bloody fangs. Instead, I saw Dill ringing the bell with all his might in Atticus's face. Jim looked so awful, I didn't have the heart to tell him I told him so. He trudged along, dragging the pole behind him on the sidewalk. Atticus said, "Stop ringing that bell." Dill grabbed the clapper. In the silence that followed, I wished he'd start ringing it again. Atticus pushed his hat to the back of his head and put his hands on his hips. "Jim," he said, "what were you doing?"
"Nothing, sir."
"I don't want any of that. Tell me."
We were just trying to give something to Mr. Radley."
"What were you trying to give him?"
"Just a letter."
"Let me see it." Jim held out a filthy piece of paper. Atticus took it and tried to read it. "Why do you want Mr. Radley to come out?"
Dill said, "We thought he might enjoy us,"
and dried up when Atticus looked at him. "Son," he said to Jim, "I'm going to tell you something and tell you one time. Stop tormenting that man. That goes for the other two of you." What Mr. Radley did was his own business. If he wanted to come out, he would. If he wanted to stay inside his own house, he had the right to stay inside, free from the attentions of inquisitive children, which was a mild term for the likes of us. How would we like it if Atticus barged in on us without knocking when we were in our rooms at night? We were, in effect, doing the same thing to Mr. Radley. What Mr. Radley did might seem peculiar to us, but it did not seem peculiar to him. Furthermore, had it never occurred to us that the civil way to communicate with another being was by the front door instead of a side window? Lastly, we were to stay away from that house until we were invited there. We were not to play an asinine game he had seen us playing or make fun of anybody on this street or in this town.
"We weren't making fun of him. We weren't laughing at him," said Jim. "We were just..."
"So that was what you were doing, wasn't it?
Making fun of him?"
"No," said Atticus, putting his life's history on display for the edification of the neighborhood. Jim seemed to swell a little.
"I didn't say we were doing that. I didn't say it."
Atticus grinned dryly. "You just told me," he said. "You stop this nonsense right now, every one of you." Jim gaped at him. "You want to be a lawyer, don't you?" Our father's mouth was suspiciously firm, as if he were trying to hold it in line. Jim decided there was no point in quibbling and was silent. When Atticus went inside the house to retrieve a file he had forgotten to take to work that morning, Jim finally realized that he had been done in by the oldest lawyer's trick on record. He waited a respectful distance from the front steps, watched Atticus leave the house, and walk toward town. When Atticus was out of earshot, Jim yelled after him,
"I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, but I ain't so sure now."